There's always a reason for something to happen. And if you have a crisis of faith, then you should dig deep. If you are dumped on your ass, you should dig deep and to figure out what that is, because you know that thing about God is trying to tell you something.
Hey folks, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm glad you are here with me in the house as we are officially now in fall. The leaves are starting to turn, the elections are getting close, and the conversations are getting a little bit more interesting. And this week's conversation will be no different. I'm excited to welcome to the table my friend Don Lemon. He has spent three decades on local and national TV. He's a trusted voice and out there, and no more than during tragic times like the Sandy Hook massacre, war-torn Europe, and during the riots of 2020, Don's voice was one that people turned to for insight, information, and comfort, to be honest. Anchoring Don Lemon tonight on CNN for many, many years, he was known for not just hard-hitting interviews with public officials and compassionate dialogues with everyday people, but just having fun and showing how these conversations could be interesting and thought-provoking and challenging, but also fun. And I've always enjoyed watching him. He now hosts the Don Lemon Show, which is streaming on all platforms. And he's out with a new memoir, which we will get into, which was right up my alley. I Once Was Lost, My Search for God in America. It's out right now. I really encourage you to pick up a copy of it. It is a sobering read. It is a personal journey. And it is one that will ask you to ask questions about your own faith journey in this crazy, wacky space we call America. So I'm really looking forward to having Don join us. You're going to get into the conversation with him and me coming up next right here on the Michael Steele Podcast.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. So I'm just telling you right up front, just if you don't have something in the cup, you got 30 seconds, go get it and come back, because you're going to love it. You're going to love this conversation with my man, Don Lemon. I've been a great admirer and fan of his for a long time, especially around New Year's. But that's another conversation, because this brother let his hair down and my wife and I literally would sit on the couch with a bottle of champagne and get just as toasty as my boy was on TV and love every minute of it. Welcome, Don Lemon, to the podcast, baby. Mike,
thank you for inviting me on. It's good to see you. We haven't spoken in a while. And you know what? Every single day, people are like, I miss you. Well, they say, I miss you on CNN. But you know what I miss the most? And I'll say, what? New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve.
Without you. That was when the real show started, when you came on. I'm like, because Michael, what are people doing on New Year's Eve? They're getting toasty like you and your wife.
Yes.
Somebody's sitting around talking policy, right?
No. And we're looking to, you know, enjoy. If you're at home, if you choose to be at home and you're going to have the TV on, you're going to watch the ball come down, you want to watch it with someone who's having as much fun as you are.
Right.
So you brought that joy every New Year's, but you also brought an impeccable body of work over your 17 plus years at CNN, the work you're doing now, and you have come out with a new book, which I have to tell folks, just and tell you honestly, I did not expect this book. I did not expect this book from you. It was deeply personal in ways that I thought really refreshing. Particularly knowing, some of your backstory and some of the things that you've shared over the years on the air. I Once Was Lost is a powerful journey of faith, which I think will catch readers a little bit off guard in a very good way. Tell us a little bit about your mindset in bringing this story to us now, and why you thought or even felt compelled, if maybe too strong a word, but I think it works, to write this story the way you did.
That's a big question, and it's a good one. It was supposed to be sort of a follow-up or coda to my previous book, which came out during COVID and George Floyd, right? Just a follow-up on racism, because a lot of the racism was rooted in religious doctrines, right? A lot of that ignorance about religious doctrines and people using the Bible to not only to subjugate women, but to enslave African Americans and so on. And I just started to see the hypocrisy just increasing in our politics, and our politics becoming just flooded and infiltrated with religion, and mostly from evangelical sort of radical people, trying not only trying to blur the line between church and state, but really trying to erase that line. And I've always been a person of faith. I don't wear it on my sleeve. It's something that's private. If you choose to be a preacher or a pastor or someone who wants to go out and preach, then that's your business. My faith is more personal than that. And I almost said my religion, because I don't, religion is not something that's very attractive to me, but faith is. And so this book was about my love for God, my love for country, and how it helped to shape me into the person that I am today, and how it helped me to fight against the really toxic evangelical teachings that sought to marginalize me and other people who are parts of underserved communities, like women, minorities, members of the LGBTQ community, and so on. And so that was that. The mindset that you ask about was just truth. I always want to be truthful. I always want to inform people. I started writing this book in 2022 before I left CNN and before I was fired from CNN. And then when I did, I put it down for a summer. And when I went back to it, it was a completely different and more personal book.
And I can see that. I can see that as someone who had, I appreciate everything you just said about that faith journey and what this moment means when you're sort of taking a step back and looking at that journey. Then something happens like what happened at CNN and all the drama there. Then you come back to it and you have a different appreciation of what the journey really is, because faith in this instance really tests its own principles as you understand them. What is faith? What is it, a faith in the thing that I'm doing? Is it a faith beyond the thing I'm doing? And I know in my journey, which is why I identified so much with this book in terms of, leaving myself open to a calling to become a priest and going into a monastery and spending years there, and reconciling parts of that journey with what's going on in the world and all of that. You really you sort of capture all of that right at the beginning of the book. And I just want to pull up a quick quote on that. You said, "I've always understood that faith is something we need, even as a cynical world tries to tell us otherwise. The world tends to focus on those moments that dump you on your ass. Faith focuses on the formidable arms that sweep you back into the rhythm of love." And that theme is something you carry forward in this book in ways I hope people really see, because you talk, one of the great scenes is you're a 3-year-old, you're at church, your mama is you're a little bit restless, as little 3-year-old boys tend to be, more so than girls sometimes, and you're a little antsy, but she picks you up, puts her in your arms.
Come on.
Your grandma, that's right, your grandma puts her in your arms. And the Holy Spirit must have hit her because she stood up to shout and give glory and dumped your ass on the floor. That is, but faith is like that. I mean, it's that sweeping up, all right, and holding, but it's also that moment where you're popped into a new reality, right? And
Well,
you
oh, sorry.
talk about that, and I think in a very expressive way.
And that's kind of the whole thing. Like, even if you have a crisis of faith, and I think we all have had that, which was part of the reason that I wrote this after my sister died. But you're right, because when I thought about, what was going on and what was happening in my life, that was kind of a metaphor, right? Somebody dumps you on your ass, and then all of a sudden, the people sweep in. And for me, I think for most people it's true, but I know for me, there's been a common theme in my life that women have swept me up and kept me going every time I'm out. Man, I got to tell you, the Black sisters, we missed you on CNN, right? And then I'm joking, but not far off. That's kind of what they say. We love everything, Don Lemon. Where are you? How can I get you? And so that was, I think I said it was my first brush or my first encounter. I forget the exact words I did, but I said with the Holy Ghost, was sitting on my grandmother's lap and 3 years old at Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. And I would not have remembered this story if my sister didn't tell it so much. I laughed about it. But my grandmother had got the spirit, dumped me. I think my head probably hit the pew and I hit the floor. And my sister switched to grab, ran over to pick me up, to swoop me up. And then all of these women ran over to do the same thing. And I said, they have held me in their ample bosom, not in the weird way, but for my entire life. And I just remember that. And then that's being a theme in my life, just how much support I've always had from women. And I wanted them to know, especially what was going on and what was being written about me. I'm like, I need to know that this just ain't true. And so there's a reason that this all happened. One, I believe it was so that I could be free and independent. The other thing, I believe that it was for me to be able to write this book. And then the next thing is that I don't know, but I'm okay with not knowing what that is. God, and the person I serve has always taken care of me. And if some people may want to call it the universe, and I don't believe that my God is going to let me down. And so I want people to know that and to understand that there's always a reason for something to happen. And if you have a crisis of faith, then you should dig deep. If you are dumped on your ass, you should dig deep and to figure out what that is, because you know that thing about God is trying to tell you something.
So you have that underpinning, and you have the realization of that now as a grown ass man. I love it when you say that at various points because that's how my mom used to talk to me, and that's how I talk now when I refer to certain individuals. You're a grown ass man, you should know better, right? You note, as a gay black boy in the Deep South attending Baptist churches and Catholic school, I heard homosexuality defined as an abomination. When I came to understand the meaning of both words and then applied them to myself, I prayed as hard as a child could pray, "Please, Lord, make me not be gay." How did that impact your faith in
Well,
your, not just in a God or an institution like a church, because that's what you know as a young man, as a young boy. But as you would get older and come to the fullness of appreciating what that, who that gay black boy is, not was, but is, did that stress test your faith?
Well, what does this say? And I hope I'm not sure I don't get it right, but faith is what the evidence of things that are not seen, right? So if you are going to be a person of faith and you're going to believe in evidence or things that are not seen, then you have to question that. And so as I got older, like if you question, which is what the Bible says that you should do. If you question, then you'll come to, if you are really honest with yourself, you'll come to a realization about what is and what isn't. And as I became, as a child, that faith was magical thinking like Santa Claus. Pray as a child that way. It was like, God, please don't do this. God, please, please take the gay away and whatever. And then you, as an adult, you realize with critical thinking, as one does when one starts to realize, and I write in the book about the realization of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
As your critical thinking starts to develop, and then you go, oh, okay. I started to realize that the interpretation of the Bible and scriptures, and I'm talking about Christianity because I am that, but this goes for other religions as well. It's all in the interpretation, and people can interpret things whatever way that they want. And many times they're often wrong. So if someone tells you that they have figured it out and they know exactly what the Bible means and all the verses mean, then also ask them, like, can you hand me a grain of salt as well?
Right.
They don't know. And I also came to, when you asked me how did it test my faith, or how did I come to that realization, or just sort of square that? What I realized, quite frankly, Michael, is that the Bible is not a book of facts. It's not really a book, it's a library. It is mythology, it is allegory, and it is really lessons. It's parables as well on how to be a better person, how to find God in yourself and other people. So we're quite often looking for the image of trying to create God in our own image instead of realizing that we were created in God's image. And instead of looking for God in the image of other people, that we get so stuck trying to create God in our image, right? And so I realized most people are trying to create God in their own image instead of looking for God in other people. So if you're looking for God in other people, then you're not judging if they're gay, you're not judging if they're trans, you're not judging if they're black, you're not judging if they're white, you're not judging if they're a woman. You are what? Accepting them for who they are, where they are.
Well, isn't that the love your neighbor as yourself?
Love your neighbor as yourself, or do unto others.
Do unto others, yeah.
Right? And so as an adult, I realized that, and I said, you know what, this is all about control and really about the interpretation. You should not be judging me, because God says, don't judge, right? And so that's how I squared it. And I decided that if there is faith, if there is a God, if there is religion, and if it's not, as James Baldwin says, if we're not using it to make us bigger and stronger and more open and more connected, then why? Then we should get rid of it. So that's all critical thinking. And an
It
open
is,
mind, Michael. And an open mind. And an
and
open
yeah. So let's stress test your open mind, because you are very familiar with and have been the subject of some pretty ugly attacks, as you know. I think I have, you have. I mean, particularly as black men who through their profession and their choices and their words, stress test the systems we're in. Right? I mean, because that's what we do. That's what you've done in your media career. It's what I've done in my political career. How do you reconcile your faith then around those attacks? Particularly when they do come at you personally, where they talk about your sexual orientation, the color of your skin, all of those things that define who you are as Don Lemon, or define me as Michael Steele. How do you sort of put that faith bucket right in front so you can put all that in there?
Well, I believe that if you're talking about the attacks and all of that, I believe the criticism of me is often rooted in racism and homophobia. So I understand that that goes along with the territory. And I also believe that when the attacks and people saying things about us or writing things about us or having an understanding about us that's not necessarily true, I think it's nothing compared to the folks who fought and died to get me here. And so, in order for me to sit where I'm sitting or to have whatever platform that is that I'm having, I feel that I felt that I deserve that platform, because not only did I work for it, but there were others who worked for it for me and whose shoulders upon which I stood and still stand. So I go into it knowing that, but I also go into it knowing, Michael, not that I'm comparing myself, but Jesus was attacked constantly, right? Dr. King was attacked constantly. Any figure in our history who tried to do something good and to ha and who has tried to have an open mind, any figure has been attacked in our history. And so instead of saying, well, why me? Why me? How do I square this? I say, why not me? And perhaps that I am a person and someone who God has put here to understand that I have big things to do. And with those big things to do comes the attacks and the criticism. And if I can figure out why, if I dig deep enough and I keep asking why and I keep questioning, then I will figure that out. And that will make me a bigger, better, and stronger representative of my God.
No,
And if
dude,
that means really like, sort of pie in the sky, but that's what I actually believe. And I feel like I must keep going. I can never stop. You're not going to stop me. I'm not going to be defeated. I'm not going to fall. I'm just going to keep going. And whatever that evolves into, that is what it is. So, I face a lot of attacks, as do you, but you're still standing and I'm still standing. Keep going. And if we have to, considering our unique history as African Americans in this country, there's no way that we can stop. We would be letting all those people down, our ancestors, if we did that.
What?
And they had faith. That's what got them through. Even if
That's
they
what got
had
them
a Bible
through.
that didn't have all the passages in it, they still.
They had a childlike faith. And
They did. They had a childlike
say
faith.
that deliberately because of how you write about that.
Yeah,
You
they did have a
you're
childlike faith.
skeptical of that.
But you have to, here's what you have to remember, and that I someone said the other night, and I thought about, like, all of the women who had babies in the field. They went, they had babies in the field. We forget that. We tend to forget. Or all the lashes that people got from not doing what the master told us to do. All of the people who were lynched, right? And they had faith, but they got through it for us. So I don't believe that my journey or even my life is over just if when I leave this earth. I believe that what I say and what I do here and what this book and what I leave, that that's going to carry on. And so whatever the circumstances are here, these circumstances are not permanent. It is what it's how I choose to respond to them because of my faith. And then who knows what will happen in the future? Who knows how God is going to use this book or my other books or my work or what something that I've said or how he's going to use me in the future. And so that's my childlike faith that I believe will carry me through and up to all of this.
But
I'm
it's not a submissive
to criticism.
faith. It's not a submissive acceptance. How does that work for you? Because when Christ oftentimes in both parables and in conversations with his apostles refers to children and the innocence of children. That for me is always a very a compelling aspect of faith is there is an innocence, not in a sense of being naive or gullible or even submissive to the point of losing one's identity, but it's more of a giving oneself over completely and saying I am like that clay, that piece of clay. Shape me, mold me into being that better person. And that is for me a big part of the faith journey. It's an everyday shaping of the gospel teachings into my skin, into my being, and then having that expressed through what you see. In the Catholic Church, one of the things I learned very early in my seminary training was a dying to self, because it ain't about you.
You're reading my mind. Go on.
Right? It ain't about you. So the first thing you got to learn in order for you to be a faithful servant for others is you have to die to oneself. Let me shape you, let me help you be that. And that faith is trusting in God doing that.
So as you're sitting here saying that, I just, I was thinking about this. One is you were talking about children, and it's children are just kind of pure, right? They're just, right? Because they haven't absorbed all the toxicity. I believe there are two points when we're closest to the source, and that's when we're children and then when we're old, right? Just coming out of wherever where you just have to trust, where you are not thinking, you are just trusting the process of
That's
life,
it.
right? You're born, someone's going to take care of you. Eventually, you're going to get to a place where you can take care of yourself. And then there's everything that happens in the middle. And then at the end, you end up having to have that same faith, right? The natural sort of progression of, how long am I going to be with it? Or I'm about to leave and I'm going to be closer to the source again. I believe that when when you talk about that childlike thing, that's when we're really, that's when we're at our most pure as it relates to just having faith in the whole process of God and life. And so, I'm kind of in the middle now where people tend to overthink things and you keep praying, make me closer to you, make me do this. This is a part where we should be the smartest and realize, well, look at where I came from, look at where I am. And then look, think about where you're going. And so right now, right, when you're sort of in the middle where you and I are and where most people are, this is where we should be most faithful with an awareness. Because in those other times we were most faithful, we did not have an awareness at all. Do you understand what I'm
I
saying?
got you. No, I'm vibing all the way with you. No, I get it. I get it.
And so this is the part where we should just be, where we should be happy and mindful in the awareness that we have, because we didn't have it as a child, and we're probably not going to have it as we get older. We'll have it as we get older, but when the process, we tend when we're going on to,
Yeah, so what you're talking about, there's a bookend, if you want to look at it in that framing. It is as a child, a baby, an infant, a toddler, even as a grade schooler, there is that innocence, that faith in our parents and those that love us, like we were talking a little bit before, your grandmother. Who took you up in her arms and her bosom when you were restless, and you felt comfortable and safe there, and you had faith, to use that word, in that moment of protection, and then all of a sudden she stood up and threw your ass on the floor, and then you were like, "Grandma, what the hell are you doing?" Right? It's like, "Oh, okay, I don't know about grandma today," because but you had others who then came to you to help, right, in those moments. Same is true at that other bookend in your life, where and I saw this with my mom in her 96th year, as she had gone through that transition, and her faith in God firm, but also her faith in us to care for her and to help her and to be there for her, and to sort of give herself over in that sense, to her last moments last year. And so that was a very stark moment. And to be honest, I'm still wrapping my head around that, and the emotions that go with that, because God has ways of testing our faith, not just in him, but in each other and in the very things we claim that we believe and the way we claim we define ourselves. And these moments, whether it is the loss of your sister, the loss of my mother last year, those are moments where all of that is put in front of you and go, "Okay, really? Okay. Tell me something now. Talk to me now, right? Tell me what you're feeling now. Tell me what you think you know now." And that's a very powerful lesson if we're open to learning it. But a lot of people aren't. And I want to get into that, because as we started the conversation, you noted this was a book about a lot of things, obviously, but it's also about politics and how our faith gets distorted and used against us by others. So I want to get into that a little bit. Don Lemon has a new book out. I'm urging everyone to get it. I Once Was Lost, My Search for God in America. It is out now. It is a comfortable read. I like the way you talk in this book. I like the way you express an idea and thought in this book. It's like you're sitting here across from me doing it when I'm holding the book. So really appreciate that. You will too, folks. We're going to take a quick break. More with Don Lemon right after this. Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele Podcast. The book is I Once Was Lost, My Search for God in America. The author is the incomparable Don Lemon. You've known him for his many years on CNN. You've had a few after parties with him on New Year's for sure. But he's written, I think, a very special book. And I want to switch gears a little bit now that we've sort of covered the sort of faith journey part of the narrative. And turn to what happens when I call it people losing faith. In fact, you noted at one point, and I highlighted, I'm seeing I got to go to my highlight in the book here real quick, where you talk about the faith that people have, and you used Abraham. Talk to me about Abraham.
Oh, yeah. You mean
Because
you're talking about going up to the mountain and
going
sacrificing?
up to the mountain, I've always, and the reason when I read that section of the book, I literally had to pause a little bit because I have that has been the Abraham sacrificing of his son at the command of God as the quintessential ultimate test of faith. You threw some cold water on that.
Yes, because about Moloch and the folks and still standing, but I think that he had a faith, right? That when he that he they could either do with Moloch, right, or they could Abraham did. The long story short, he goes up and there's supposed to be the ram and whatever and the sacrifice on the top of the mountain. He gets there and there's already a sacrificial lamb already up there, so he doesn't sacrifice his son. So I don't know if I throw cold water on it. I'm interested to, why, but I just have a kind of turn on things. And I think it's all in the interpretation. I think that he knew what I write in there. He knew that there was all that he had faith that there was going to be already a sacrificial lamb atop that mountain and he wasn't going to have to do it. And he came down with his son and changed the minds of everyone. To who had thought and who were in fear that they were going to have to do the same thing
Same
that
thing,
somebody else
right.
did, and that was sacrifice their own child. But I think that whole sacrificing their own child was a misinterpretation of God's teaching.
Okay, talk
Yeah.
to me.
Well,
Why?
because again, I think it's parable, and I don't believe that I think everybody takes things literally.
Right.
And he said, well, it's all in your interpretation, but it's also all in your faith and of what you believe in. So if you're literally interpreting that you've got to go up there and you've got to, sacrifice your child, then no, but there are certain things that you have to sacrifice, and certain things that you have to do in life in order to be a follower and a believer.
Right.
And so, and some of those things are just tests, but they're not actual literal tests where you do exactly what they're writing in the book, right? And especially, look, I also turn the whole Immaculate Conception on its head as well.
Well,
That people, okay, it just couldn't be that Joseph was this nice guy and this woman got pregnant and they weren't married. And so he was trying to take her out of town so that she wouldn't, because you would be killed or you could be stoned, right? Then. So it wasn't just enough that Joseph was doing this sort of beneficent thing that they had to make it into a whole thing, and they had to turn it into like a virgin sacrifice. Look, it's so funny. They say the truth is often spoken in jest. There's a comedian who said, and I was just listening to it last night, and he said, the Bible talks about people talking about things being unreal and what, and then he went on and whatever. I forget the exact way he said it, and he goes, you think it's unreal that that somebody said something about something, and this is unreal. And then he goes, "Oh, but you actually believe that somebody got pregnant without,
Well,
doing the deed, or that I don't. It was just funny. The things
no,
that we
it
believe and things that we don't.
I, no, and
You
I
get what I'm
get
saying? Sorry, maybe I didn't tell the story right, but you know what I'm saying."
I know what you're saying. No, I know what you're saying, and I think, but what it goes to is, it really kind of goes into this whole space of what we are called on to believe that sets up the whole narrative about faith. Maybe the Immaculate Conception of Mary and the Immaculate the impregnation of her by, because the Immaculate Conception is her conception without sin, and then of course there is the her being able to conceive Jesus. Those things are arcs of belief, and maybe that it's not so much a literal thing, but the idea speaks to the power of a loving God. And getting
And
back
not
to
only a loving God, but a loving, humane person too. I mean, Joseph
right.
was, think about what
Because
Joseph.
the story is really about more about Joseph
Yes.
than anything. And people lose sight of poor little Joseph.
Yes, Joseph was doing this really great thing. And look, I hypothesized something in there that I won't share. I'll wait for the audience. I'll wait for the reader to figure it out. But I also hypothesized something about Joseph, and people are like, "Oh, I can't believe you said that." I said, but come on. Let's be real. Should I tell him what I said?
Yeah, go ahead. No, I think it's
Or I
good
say, well,
because
maybe Joseph was, this sort of gay guy who said, this woman, I
okay,
don't want
everybody
her to
pick yourself
die.
up off the floor.
Right. I don't want her to die or be stoned to death or whatever because she is, got pregnant and she's not married. And then, I am not married and whatever. So, okay, this is kind of perfect.
Because he was an older gentleman, unmarried gentleman.
Yes, and so it's kind of perfect. And so he took her out of her town and took her to Bethlehem, and they,
And he got out of that town too.
I'm just saying. So it wasn't, like I say, it wasn't just enough that this story could be about Joseph and that he's a good guy and that he's actually helping out this woman. They had
Right.
all of this stuff around it. But also, if you look at the Bible, I think the Bible's one of the most interesting, I think it's the most interesting book that has
Yeah,
ever written.
I agree.
Dynasty in the 80s. That has nothing on the Bible, right? Right. And so I think that, it's there to make us interested, right? To make us think, but
It
also
is.
just how to be good people, better humans.
It's an instruction manual. I like the way you
Yes.
described it at the beginning, but it really is an instruction manual for humanity. And look, the Old Testament was all about the rules and regulations, right? To become a better person, to become a God-fearing individual. The New Testament is about, okay, how we change up the game and how we go from an eye for an eye to turn the other cheek. We go from loving honoring God to loving and honoring each other, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and to all these things that sort of
You're contradictory.
that are contradictory and yet improve upon our humanity. And so when you go back to Abraham, which for me was always a compelling story, because I remember when my son was born, asking myself, if God asked me to do something like that, would I do it? Could I do it? And I realized a lot about that story, particularly, and I'm glad because you point this out in very specific terms, that there was a ram there to be sacrificed. I've always taken that as Christ. I've always taken that the ultimate sacrifice was Christ himself. And so we are called into that moment where our faith is tested. And then what we realize that Christ is there. that that's the sacrifice. And so it was, for me, it was just real interesting the way you set this narrative in place, the way you tell the story, sort of in a different interpretation about Joseph. Go ahead.
But let me ask you that, and I don't know if I did this, I don't think I did this in the book, and I should have, is that perhaps the thing is, why would God ask you to sacrifice your son, right? The why in that. Why is that? And then when after the why, then you can sort of figure out, like, how it plays out in the Bible and why it's written the way it's written. But why would God ask you to do that?
Right.
That's the thing I kept questioning while I was writing this book, and then after my sister died, and even trying to figure out why politics were infecting our faith or religion. It's the why.
Right.
Why would he
Right.
want us to do that? Why is he testing us? Why are you doing this? Why is he testing us? What does he want? And not exactly in the literal meaning of you go up, you sacrifice your child, you come back down from the mountain. That's not it.
Right. It's not it.
No, that's not it.
No, it because we do that all the time,
Right. But
right?
it's also in the you can't eat bacon then, you can't eat shellfish. And it's like people get so stuck in the actual literal thing instead of the why. What does this mean? Not that it's a law.
Right. So you turn the page on that and move us in the conversation when you make the point in the evangelical world, resistance to change is cast as steadfast. Blind acceptance of obsolete dogma is praised as childlike faith. And that's the distortion. That's the disruption, I think, in a lot of respects. And you reference our buddy Tim Alberta in his book, which I love his work in this space, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. Where we have to today in this modern era, our politics having, and this is the way I would interpret it, our politics once reflected our values, faith, traditions, religion, etc., our culture, who we were as a nation, right? And all the struggles that came with that. We would identify ourselves through those things, and that would be reflected back through public policy and our politics. Today, it seems like our politics has infected our faith journey, where now we value our political alliances more than the teachings of the gospel, and that we are so lost that we will actually create a graven and false image of God in the form of Donald Trump
Yeah.
as savior, as Moses.
But think about this when you talk, when I, because I write about guns and there are other things that I write about that we,
Yes, that's what I was getting to. Go there.
guns have become a religion,
Yes.
right? And then we turn things, as you said, our political ideologies into gods. When, so I believe, and that comes from really, I think a lot from evangelicals and the influence that they have on politics. And I think that that sort of that those toxic teachings are turning everything into a religion, like guns, and that people get so steadfast and so strident in their beliefs and their ideology. I think that that is pushing us towards a theocracy, and that theocracy is not only pushing us further away from religion or God,
Right.
pushing us further away from democracy, right? And that is the erasing of the line between church and state. And even in the Abraham thing, there's a lesson in it for us right now, what's happening now. And that is, what are we willing to sacrifice in order to have such literal, concrete interpretation of our own ideologies?
I put it after the most recent shooting, I put it this way on air, and exactly to your point. I said we have now occupied the space that we value an AR-15 more than we value the life of a 6-year-old child.
That's true. We do.
We will we will we will we will burn the country down to save that AR-16 through the Second Amendment and the Constitution.
Are you really saving an AR-15? Are you, or is it that something else that's within you that you're saving? Are you saving the actual physical ownership of a gun? Yes, I would say in one way, but I think it's also treating the Bible, treating the Constitution as if it's the Bible, and the Bible as if it's the Constitution. I think we, yeah.
And it becomes this literal thing that you value more than anything else, and therefore interpret everything else through that.
Yes.
And that's the poison that I see permeating certainly throughout my political party, that it has struggled against, not just in the recent era of this 21st century, but it goes back to the very early days of the 20th century, where there this alliance is formed that there's a political advantage born out of it that corrupts. And so I saw it certainly in the mid 80s when Reagan cut his bargain with the moral majority to secure his
I
political
write about it in
power.
the book. It's the moral majority. It's the Heritage Foundation, right? It's Pat Robertson's of the world. Was it Roberts? Robertson.
Pat Robertson.
Robertson. Yeah. And so you're right about that. But also when you said that the 20th century, the beginning, remember I write in the book about manifest destiny, where all of us, just say, look, we are, this is a decree that all of us, that Christians have dominion over all of America. And you're like, wait, the Native Americans are like, wait, what? Why? Because God deemed it so and we said so. That's it.
White man speaks funny. What are you
Yes.
saying?
And look where we are now.
Yes. Look where we are now. Well, and that was illustrated. I love the scene in the book with Ted. I love that scene because it was really illustrative of what has always been a part of the American narrative, that aspect of our faith journey.
Said with Ted.
Yes, in the Ted, yeah, the guy, when you were walking down Fifth Avenue or Park Avenue with your
Oh,
hoodie.
yeah. Ted or Tim. It's you know why I forget, because
Yes, Ted.
that's
It's
not his
Ted.
name. And
Huh?
we both know this gentleman. And maybe I'll tell you afterwards who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Park Avenue
it's
story.
so to set the scene for this, it's really you were talking about walking down Park Avenue, and you started by talking about when you and Tim are out together, how you're treated versus how he's treated, how you're treated when you're walking your dogs versus how he's treated when he's walking the dogs, how when you're at t dinner together, the waiter will come up and give you the check because, of course, the
They don't
white man
recognize
is the only one paying this
me. I know,
meal.
but if I have a suit on, they're just like, oh, you're the guy usually. But if I don't, I'm like wearing a baseball cap or whatever. I'm like, all right, come on, guys.
Right, exactly. So then you go on, you talk about walking down the street and running into this individual whom you will call Ted. And you talk about, as you were approaching him, he obviously didn't recognize you. You go, "Hey, it's Don Lemon." And he's like, "Oh, Don, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's cold." So, you like you say, it's cold. I have my hood on, so I guess I'm scaring people, right? That's what he that's
You
your
always fall back on that because you got to do something because it's so awkward usually. You know what I
It's
mean?
such But you go on in that moment and you talk about how, but for your saying, "Hey, it's Don Lemon," he saw this black man coming towards him with a hood on, and you say, "Hey," and he's like, "Not now.
He said, "No, thank you,"
No, thank you."
as because
Right.
as if I was
A panhandler or
panhandling.
someone. And it's such a real expressive moment because you go on and you talk about, quote, "Why am I apologizing for keeping my ears warm? I got my hoodie on, right? Why should I feel compelled to demonstrate how non-threatening I am?" That compulsion runs deep for every black man I know. It doesn't matter if you're wearing a $1,200 hoodie, walking on Park Avenue with three little dogs who look about as menacing as a trio of birthday party balloon poodles. Ted's briefly startled reaction wasn't quantifiable as traumatic in and of itself, but racial trauma is cumulative.
Yeah, and you know what? We think that we're used to it until it happens, right? And then we make up all the excuses because it happens to us so much. But am I used to it? No. I think it startled him more than it did me.
Right.
And I think because I have experience with it, I was able to, get past the awkwardness. But
You
each
can
time,
make him less uncomfortable.
yes, and why am I doing that? But
Hey,
each
why are you doing that? Yes.
We both knew what was happening in the moment. And
Yep.
he's like, sorry. And then he asked me what I was doing. And I said, I'm writing a book. And he said, I'm what? And I said, God. He's like, doubly, like, wait, what? Like, who are you? And I just remember when I got back to the.
Your ass gonna be in
No, I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about it. And the thing is that he probably would not have been into it in the book had I not been on the phone with the book collaborator.
Right.
And I was walking, and she's like, I got your notes. You want to go through some of the stuff that you sent me, and let's talk about it and where you should place it, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm talking, and I'm walking the dogs, and I'm like, whatever. And then she hears all of this and records it going on. And when he walked away, I went back to the thing saying, okay, so maybe I think we should do this, and then put the chapter. And she goes, wait, hold on. What just happened? Can we talk about that? And for me, I was just like, oh, well, this shit happens all the time. I didn't even think it was a thing, Michael. Do you know what I mean?
I do very much know what you mean.
And then I got back to the hotel and I didn't realize, but my fiance then, husband now, said, so much for that Bruno Cucinelli sweater that you were in so high on buying from Bergdorf's. And I'm like,
Right.
yeah. And I realized, like, this people think that money and your position or whatever protects you from racism. It doesn't.
Does not.
For having those experiences, it may offer you a bit of cushion because you know what I'm saying, but it doesn't protect you from it. It's everywhere. I forgot about that story.
It was a great scene in the book. It does speak a lot to, certainly for someone like myself. I mean, I'm much older than you are,
No, you're not, Michael.
and
You're not that much older than me. You think you are.
I
Everybody
love
just thinks I'm 12 because I've had so much plastic surgery. No,
it.
I have not had that.
Look, you haven't gotten the cat eyes yet, so that's good stuff. You got a good surgeon.
I haven't gotten anything yet. Everything works. Forehead still works. All of that. But I think that I don't want people because that'll be in the New York Post,
Of course, of
right?
course.
Right.
Two black men discussing their cosmetic surgery. What's God's plan next for you? You've put on paper, I think, a journey that was well worth telling. And it is a faith journey in all respects. And you've weathered a lot of changes recently in your life. And as you noted at one point, you were at this spot where it was all kind of clicking and working, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. And we've all been in that space. And to the point of the story of Ted, for African Americans, that disruption oftentimes leads to a deep fall because we don't have a lot of ladders around us that as we're falling, we can grab a rung and hold on and start to pull ourselves back up. It
Or
tends to be.
following that the right has, right?
Yes.
Right.
But the one thing that has always, and you've referred to this already, the one thing that has sustained our journey from 1619 to the present day has been faith. What do you think God's plan for you as you consider your faith in the journey you're on? What do you think's next? How do you see that playing out?
I think I would be defying what I think my faith is if I tried to tell you what I think God's plan is for me, because right now I really don't know. And that's the whole point of having faith. And so wherever I am, I enjoy it. And I think that God's plan for me now is right here. And then the next thing will come. But I have to tell you, as I write about all of these things about, dealing with the depression that comes after, getting fired or whatever, not n nothing that I didn't overcome, but just having an awareness of those things. If it had not been for this faith that I have, I wouldn't be here, right? I wouldn't be here talking to you. I'm not saying that I would be gone from the earth. That is a possibility, especially if you let your depression overcome you, right? If you lose a loved one, and by the way, I'm sorry, for the loss of your mom.
No, I appreciate that.
If I had let the grief and the depression overcome me, when my sister died, or which was a real grief and depression. I remember being on I went to the Time 100 thing, Michael, right after I got fired from CNN, and they said, how do you feel about losing your job? And I said, well, I didn't lose my job. I lost my sister. So my job lost me, but I lost my sister. And that was a much deeper grief and pain and depression than this will ever be, or could ever be. So what's God's plan for me? God's plan for me is his plan, and I'm going to let him let it unfold in my life.
And that's the rule I follow every day. People look at me and go, "So what are you doing next?" I was like, "I don't know. I'll wake up tomorrow morning and I'll be told."
Isn't that great? Isn't that great?
It's great. And you know what's great about it, Don? It's freeing as hell. It is the freest thing in the world to get up and just experience the day
Yeah.
and experience life as it unfolds in front of you. Now, it drives my wife a little bit crazy. And she's like, "Okay, you're a little bit too loose on the feeling the day." So I, because I got three things I need you to do. So
Planner, and you're not. Hey, when's your birthday? Are you a Pisces?
I'm a Libra, baby.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait a minute. Did you just have a birthday?
It's coming up in October.
Oh, it is. That's right. I'm thinking we're.
October 19th, yeah.
And my mom is October 6th. She.
Yeah.
But you're late. You're almost on the cusp. You're right.
Almost. I got a little bit of that extra in the back end, but yeah. But most of my life is seeking balance and just letting it flow and come in and yeah, it drives my Pisces wife a little bit nuts. I
And
mean,
your wife is a
Taurus. My
Pisces.
wife is my sister's a Pisces. My wife is a Taurus. I don't think
Oh,
so.
strong like.
Exactly. Exactly. You know why this brother's always like in a Zen position?
Because you have to be.
I have to be. I have to be, 'cause Lord knows, Jesus, Lord knows.
But Michael, can I ask you? But you've had. Do you mind if I ask you? Can I switch with
Sure.
you?
No, let's switch up. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you have had a from I don't know if you remember the first time we met, and it was years ago. I interviewed you in your office, and you were head of the RNC then, in DC. Were you in DC? Or were you? Where was your
In
office?
DC or on Capitol Hill, yeah.
Did you have your own office somewhere else, or was it in Virginia? Or was it in DC?
It was in DC.
DC. Okay.
Yep.
And so, and I believe that same week, because I was on a series, I interviewed Colin Powell, and I think it was going to do like black leaders, and you were one of them. And you're always a good guy, but you have evolved, and you've changed, and you've allowed that, which I think is a sign of an intelligent person. It's like when you get new information, when you get facts, when you get new evidence, you evolve. And you're not strident in your belief, as I believe the folks who are part of the MAGA cult, and I will say cult now, who are part of the MAGA cult are doing. They can't change because it's a cult. They have to be deprogrammed. And you were never there, but I'm just saying you had an evolution, and you never allowed yourself to get bogged down in the crazy conspiracy theories, and you saw your party going off the edge. And then you have this, your mom dies, and there you have this crisis. What has that been like for you? Because that's a lot, I think.
As I said at the beginning,
And you're
that's
on
not.
MSNBC, for God's sake.
It's
Like you're on Fox, but I mean, I think you'd be in trouble.
not just coffee in this cup.
Right, 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 right.
I celebrate New Year's every day, baby, at 10 o'clock a.m. I'm starting. It's a new day. That's an excellent question. My mother. That story is, and I probably should write it. I have the title of the book in my head, and it's just in my heart. It's Maybelle and Me, or Maybelle's Son, which is a little bit more accurate. It's just she told me how to be free of a lot of crazy stuff. I grew up in DC at a time where, she couldn't take me to parks in DC because they were for white only. We couldn't shop at certain stores. And in this environment, she taught me a love for a country that didn't love back, right? And she taught me to be an independent thinker. She always stressed that. Always think for yourself. She said, never follow the crowd. Never follow the crowd because you are your own leader. And if you do it right, others will follow you. You don't, and then learn how to be responsible and accountable. And so all this stuff, man, it just came at me. And I just found it easier not to get caught up in other people's stupid and be in a situation. One thing is I always hated when I was at the RNC, and even when I was lieutenant governor, was explaining someone else's behavior. I'm like, what? I ain't do that shit they did. Why are you asking me? You need to go talk to them. I didn't do it. And what does it matter what my opinion is of what they did?
Right.
And so that I've always sort of resisted that part of it. And thank you for recognizing the sense of always being open to new information and new thoughts, even when it doesn't sit well with what you think you believe. And that's why there were a lot of lessons in your book about challenging yourself with new information, challenging your faith, because that's the hardest thing. The hardest thing, I believe this is what I have faith in, right? And there are times where I think God calls us to even challenge ourselves on that, right? I'm putting this in front of you, but it's up to you to. That free will thing is a bitch.
Okay, can I ask you another thing? Are
Yeah.
you still a Republican?
Yes, I am, because it pisses them off.
But you realize
It's,
you are not what the Republican Party has become.
I know, and that's that I stand. So I'm glad you said that, because one thing I wanted to get into with you at certain aspect of the book, which aligned with my training as a seminarian, when I was talking before about a dying to self. The other thing, one of the reasons why we wear religious habits, one of the reasons why we wear the crucifix, one of the reasons why we have these symbols that we put out as outward signs, is that we must be a sign of contradiction to the world. And so my faith journey, whenever I would go out in my habit, I knew in that moment I was being a sign to the world of something important, something possible, not just being in a religious community or going through all of those machinations, but this sense of loving others purely and openly without fear. I love you as a brother in Christ, whether I know you or not, right? And that's important. That's an important sign that we should all be willing to share with each other. And yet, to points that you make very clearly in the book, we've allowed our politics, we've allowed our lack of faith, our lack of belief in ourselves, let alone others, to become the thing that is rotting us from within. And so it's easier to sort of hold on to that than to be that sign of contradiction, man, to go out there and live the gospel life and the gospel teaching in a way that others see that and appreciate it for what it is. And it may at some point call them to that. right? To that love of another neighbor the way you are loved.
So, can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Okay. So, when you look, we've got come so far from, you remember when, people would say, "Oh my God, George Bush is the worst," and
Right.
right?
I remember well.
I wonder if perhaps then that you were exactly what the Republican Party needed. And I say that, I preface the question with this, right? Because this is like a, maybe I'm soft-pedaling a little bit, right? I'm wondering how you feel when you see people like Mark Robinson, not he, I mean, that's the extreme. And then you see Byron Donalds, and then you see Tim Scott,
Right.
all of these guys sort of who are black men and have a certain relationship as with the country, with America. And I don't believe there's a more unique relationship with America than African Americans, right?
Agreed.
Folks. The second or one of similar would be Native Americans. Being brought here as slaves and treated the way we were, we have a unique relationship to this country. And as I write in the book, as a black man, I have a unique relationship, a problematic relationship with the flag, right? But I love it, right? I love it for what it stands for. And as a gay man, I have a comp I say complicated. I have a complicated relationship with the Bible.
Right.
And you see people conducting themselves in that way, especially considering our relationship to America and what this particular individual and movement is doing to the country. What do you think about that? How does that make you feel as someone
It
who's
pisses me off. It pisses me off. There are a few terms I could use that I think are a fuller expression of what I think of their behavior. And think of them. I think you would know what those are. I'm at once very disappointed because that's not how our journey should end, given our history. That I've always believed and still believe that African Americans, Native Americans, especially are uniquely called to this country to be that light that shows the value of the words written on parchment by the founders, right? And I recently gave a talk and I it was a room full of African Americans and women and cross section of folks, and I looked out. I said, "We all know that these words weren't written for us. They weren't written for many of the people in this room. But the beauty of this journey is that we now own those words. They're ours. And we are a fuller expression of those words than the founders could ever imagine. And so it is incumbent on us to be an example of those words at all times." Because we know they weren't for us, but now we have them. They're ours, right? We are the people that are part and parcel of forming this more perfect union. Yeah, baby, this is our ish too, right? We got this. So when I see especially black men behave in a way that tarnishes that legacy of ours, that gives in to the ill treatment of the black experience, that advocate for the enslavement of their own people. It is regretful, it is disappointing. It brings shame on the community and their place at the table should be removed that until they learn better. Go sit your ass in the corner until you work out your shit, because right now you messing it up for the rest of us.
They need a
And you
time.
confuse, and the last thing we need is confused white people. We need clarity in their eyes to see what our experience since 1619 has meant to this country. So we don't need you out here advocating burning books. We don't need you out here advocating for Black people to be enslaved because you want to own one. We don't need you out here, you know, saying all this stuff about gay and lesbian people and trans people when you're out there looking at trans porn. We don't need you out here with your bullshit talking about how much you love Donald Trump. You take your ass in the corner and you work that shit out. And then you are good to come back to the table and work with the rest of us to improve this country, to live up to the words that are written on that parchment.
If I was anchoring a show, I'd say Michael Steele, everyone.
And you just did, right?
Michael, if you said that on Morning Joe, wow. Imagine. That would cause a stir.
I try to say, but I can't use it the words that I'd like to really just emphasize the point.
Yeah, but you know, I do. Look, I do, and that's why I'm here in my own independent, in my own studio.
But you know what? Ownership is a beautiful thing, baby.
It's a beautiful thing. Nice, right?
I'm loving the set. That's nice. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Everybody, Don Lemon, one hell of a fine brother who's written, and I think, again, a very personal and important book, I Once Was Lost. It is his journey, but it's also ours. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing it, man. I was really excited about when I was telling me you were coming on. I was like, yes. I asked my producer, so is that happening like soon? He was like, yeah, next week. I'm like, good. I was really excited, man, to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, folks, that does it for our little time together in this conversation. You know, I always love it when you do those things you have to do to show your love, download, talk about it, like it, flip it, whip it, make it work. I appreciate it every time. Do check out the good work of Don Lemon. You can follow him on Twitter at Don Lemon. You should, because he put some good stuff there. Now you've got your own studio platform now. Tell us a quick thing about that.
It's on YouTube, The Don Lemon Show. So I think you can go to youtube.com/YouTube.com/TheDonLemonShow.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me. My TikTok is crazy. I get like sometimes millions of things. It's so interesting being... I get more people watching me on TikTok than watching me on CNN.
Yes, yes.
On Instagram. And, you know, you saw my journey to the convention and back when I interviewed all those people. And then this is what I think. You guys are just talking about this. I have been talking about Black men supporting Donald Trump forever. And I
would have.
And I show it. And then all of a sudden, now they're like, I see the people on the morning show talking about, oh, Black, you know, the Black community supporting. I'm like, I have been saying this. Where? Hello, I'm right here. So yeah, check out my YouTube channel and check out my social. I'm really having a good time doing it. Not only that, I'm informing people, so and it's resonating. So
it's good. And the other part that I love that makes it a lot of fun is, folks, he's still Don Lemon.
Yes,
he's still Don Lemon, and it's New Year's Eve every day. I love it.